As I was saying, everybody wanted to be in the Naval Air Force program, and you took these examinations, and I was about a year younger than everybody because I had started school in September. My birthday was in April, and my mother was a pretty good salesperson, and she got me into school the previous September, so I was actually in school at the age of 5. I don't know if that's a good idea, because first day in school, as I recall, I got ill, and Miss Teeby was my first grade teacher. They had to send me home sick, so they weren't sure it was a good idea to put me in class. Anyway, that meant that I really was about a year younger than all of my other friends throughout my life, throughout the years. They're all between 8 and 12 months older than I am. So in April of that year, 44, we took this exam. The only two that passed the exam in the city were Chuck Prine and myself. And we were supposed to go to the Naval Air Force program, and it was at University of Marquette where we were supposed to go. But the war was practically over at that time, and they were cutting back the Air Force programs, both Navy and Army Air Force. And they cut back the program for the Naval people, and Chuck was accepted. I was not, as number two. And my, how can I put it? My loss was that I went to Johns Hopkins University in the Air Force, in the Air Force program. So I was extremely fortunate.
Yes,
to, and I had a, so I went there, and was there for two semesters, and I was a witness to, this was called, the Air Force program called the Army Specialized Training Reserve Program. But it was an Air Force unit. And in addition at the university, there was the senior guys. I thought they were so old, they were like 21, 22, very up to, and this was General Marshall's favorite program, where he protected young men who were of exceptional ability, and they had what they called the Army Specialized Training Program. And these were fellows who were putting into these educational programs, and they'd come out of there, engineers, doctors, and so forth, and these were the cream of young America. And General Marshall, in later years, was always criticized for what he did. But then came the Battle of the Bulge, which was in the fall of 44. And I remember like it was yesterday, that the orders came that these men were taken, like, out of school and sent overseas because things were so desperate. And some of these gentlemen had not even had a gun in their hands in many months, and they weren't as highly trained as they should have been. And I remember, I considered, because I was 17, and I considered grown men in the quadrangle sitting there crying like babies, you know. They knew what was going on. They actually took these men almost straight to the ships overseas, not to any refresher courses or anything, because that's how, if you read stories about the Battle of the Bulge, and, you know, today, you'll find that it was a very critical thing in what the American soldiers did to save us during that 60-90-day period was unique. I mean, we lost a lot of people. But in any event, and Baltimore was wonderful. It's a wonderful city, and again, it was a wonderful experience. Studied hard, and it was very difficult. It was very, very difficult. Then they moved our unit to Virginia Polytechnic Institute in Roanoke, Virginia. And we went to Roanoke, Virginia, and we were there for two semesters, and so that I had actually 2 years of college in 1 year, what they called the accelerated course. And then we were sent to pre-flight, we actually were supposed to go to pre-flight, and we went to Keesler Field, Mississippi, where you're supposed to do
K-E-S-S-L-E-R,
Keesler Field, It was in Biloxi, Mississippi. Keesler Field, Biloxi, Mississippi. And if there's somebody you don't really like, you could recommend they go to Biloxi, Mississippi in July. Because it was hot. And there you had to do 6 weeks of training. And then you would go on to pre-flight from there. That was the interim stop. And that was really my second instance of experiencing anti-Semitism in the service.
Tell us about it.
Let me go back to Johns Hopkins. That was my first instance.
Yes.
As I was standing in line to get my room assignment, Novick, the young man behind me, his name was Dick Nussbaum. And I guess maybe I was slightly naive. I turned, he was from Aliquippa, or Coriopolis.
Coriopolis.
I think it could be Coriopolis, Nussbaum, from Coriopolis, rather. I think Coriopolis. He was from Coriopolis. And I turned around and I introduced myself. I said, gee, you know, it's really nice. I said, you come away from home in Huska, and it looks like your roommate was by alphabet. I said, it looks like we're going to be roommates. He said, it's awfully nice to have a Jewish roommate. He looked at me with very hostile eyes and said, I am not Jewish. I was born a Catholic. I was raised a Catholic. And I expect to die a Catholic. And he was hostile to me from that moment on. And we ended up roommates.
Mm.
So it was a very difficult experience. He certainly didn't try to make my life very easy. The second was when you get into the barracks of at Keesler Field, the only thing that really made it bearable was that the rednecks that were there were more hostile to the blacks than they were to the Jews, and for whatever the reason, I was in a barracks, it wasn't too bad. But there was, I was not the only person of the Jewish faith in that unit. There were a number of others. And we had a commanding officer, was a major with red hair, I remember. And, but we were very, who was not very protective of the individuals. But we were very fortunate. There was a sergeant who had been overseas, wonderful guy that called everybody out on the playgrounds and made a speech which I'll never forget. He said, I understand there have been hostile actions versus people of Jewish faith towards black people in this unit. He said, I want to tell you something. He said, the people I love the best in this world are those of the Jewish faith and those with black faces. He says, if I ever hear any of the rest of you bothering these other recruits, he says, you'll be very unhappy to deal with me. And he really did protect us. And as a matter of fact, the commanding officer was transferred out. And so it was a very good memory in an early year of that there were good people there that that did nice things. And it made life bearable, because I can imagine if you were in a unit where the sergeant in charge or commanding officer in charge were ambivalent on this issue, that you could have a very difficult existence. But anyway, it wasn't too bad. And then we went, then something happened, a major change took place, that they didn't need any more flyers. Any more pilots. So I was called in to an office of Captain Greenberg, was his name, Captain Greenberg. Captain Greenberg said, you're not going on to pre-flight. The war is, going to be over soon. Actually, the war was practically over. It was July of 45. So the war, I think the war in September, didn't it?
Yeah, September.
Yeah. It's July. He said, we weren't going to train more pilots. He said, but since you are in the top 10% of your class, he said, you have an option. You can go to the highest rated Army Specialization School that we have, which was called the Air Weather Service. And I said, Kathy Greenberg, can I ask you a favor? I don't want to go to the highest and best. I want to go to the easiest. He looked at me. He said, you do? I said, yes. I want to go to the easiest. He says, can you type? He said, you probably can't type. You took an academic course. He said, Captain Greenberg, I can type. He says, how could you? He said, you're telling me the truth. I said, yes. I said, I fell in love with the typing teacher when I was a sophomore in high school. I dated a girl named Shirley Harrell. And her sister was the typing teacher. And I gave up my lunch hour to take typing just so I could be with this teacher. And I learned how to type. And he said, you remember it? I said, yeah. I said, it wouldn't take long. So he said, is that what you want? I said, yes. He sent me to Scottfield, Illinois, in St. Louis. Scottfield in St. Louis, in St. Louis, Missouri. And I went there, and I met Art Cochran, who was a friend of mine who went to Johns Hopkins with me. And he was a teacher, an instructor in the school. And he told me that the way the school operated, that the top student in the school would remain as an instructor. Can you imagine a soldier at school? I stayed in every night. I studied. I practiced. I graduated with the highest average in the history of Army Teletype School.
That's fantastic.
98.3. And I was kept as an instructor. Every other person in the unit was sent overseas as occupation forces. I was the only one that stayed at Scottfield. And about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, on a Saturday, there's the parade grounds. They were having on Saturday you appeared before the commanding officer and you marched around and they dismissed you and you had the weekend off. I got a call to come to the commanding general's office. Can you imagine how scared I was? I was a private first class by that time. I go to his office and who do I see? But Captain Greenberg. They were short of officers because the war was over. Everybody was leaving the service. And they were looking around the country to see who was still in the country, who had been in the topmost 10% of their class. And those that remained, they were taking them and giving them the opportunity to go and get their commission at Kelly Field in Texas. So you had to agree to sign up for 3 years. And I was due to get out in 6 months, you know. So I said, I couldn't agree to that. So then they discussed it and said, 2 years. And I said, may I call my mother? So I got my mother on the phone. And I said, Mom, this stuff. I gave her the background, the story. I said, well, three, now down to two. She said, tell them you'll stay 18 months at the most. She says, 18 months. She said it would be a great experience for you to become an officer and so forth. And I went back and I said that I would stay 18 months. And they agreed. Huh. And that afternoon, I never ever saw the people that I lived with in the barracks anymore. I went straight to my barracks as they were on the parade grounds. I packed all my stuff and went with Captain Greenberg on a B-17, and they flew me, because classes started the next day, and they flew me down to Texas, and I went into the program, and 4 months later, I received my commission, which is a story into itself also, which I'll go into the next time.
All right. That's a good place to stop for now.
Yeah.
Well, it's really very, I'm telling you, I've done several of these interviews.
This concludes Side 2, Tape 1, to be continued on Tape 2.